You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again David McIlvaney. David is the president of the McIlvaney Financial Companies, McIlvaney Wealth Management, and ICA, a precious metals brokerage firm. Thanks for joining me again, David.
Jay, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. You're sitting there, I suppose, looking out a window into the beautiful Rocky Mountains while I stare at some brick wall here. So, in any event, that's a choice that I've made and you've made. I've titled today's show, Where is America and its Markets Heading in 2019? And in writing my promotion for this, we do a little promotional piece every week for our show, I said, and I quote, America's social and moral fiber is wearing thin, and the republic our founding fathers bequeathed to us in 1776 is rapidly being torn asunder. Those are my thoughts. Do you agree with that? And if so, to what extent? And if you do agree with it, why do you think that's happening?
Right. So the torn asunder part, I might have a few issues with, because I think what we've seen is a process of erosion. And as you get to the end of a process of erosion, and maybe this is just framing, and that's the difference, but the end of the process of erosion, imagine a giant edifice. There can be a violent collapse at the end, but really what is happening today has been happening for some time. So the values that we saw expressed in 1776 by our founders, certainly they have been eroding. I think the greater issues there are social amnesia, a forgetting, a cultural amnesia, a forgetting of things that matter most. So virtue, character, and things that have permanence, we've substituted them and perhaps confused means as having greater value than ends.
You know, I wonder why we've forgotten. And I look at the educational system that we have. It seems to me that the things that I was taught by Mr. Smith back in the 19 in my eighth grade class back in Dalton, Ohio, back in the I'm really dating myself, back in the late 50s. We don't hear those values, those same values. For example, we were required to memorize the opening of the Declaration of Independence, and that has stuck with me all of these years because I think it was such an important document in expressing what America was about, its legacy, if you will. And when it comes to legacy, David, I know you've given a great deal of thought to legacy, personal legacy, national legacy too, I suppose. How have we forgotten? Because it seems to me that our country was one and is still one that is very unique throughout human history, and that its origins were very unique.
Right. So traditional values have been lost to some degree because we have misplaced priorities. The things that we prefer today come easier. If I come home from the office, I can throw up my feet and watch a television show or binge watch a Netflix period, five, six, seven shows at once. And maybe I do that because it is easy. Do you know what's harder? Harder is coming home and engaging in conversation with my wife and my kids. Uh-huh. That takes hard work. You talk about hard work in grade school, learning and memorizing the Declaration of Independence. I think to some degree, we want it easy. We want easy money. We want an easy life. We want an easy job. We don't want people to challenge us in certain ways. And you know, I think that's basically a sign of the times. We have become, because of a certain amount of prosperity, become somewhat fat, dumb, and lazy.
Well, it's human nature, I suppose. Not that the founding fathers would have been any different if they were living in this time and age.
With time, we all economize. You're exactly right. I mean, if we can find an easier way to get things done, we will. It's not necessarily an exclusive indictment on our age. Founding fathers would have done so too. But you're right. You're shaped by your circumstances. And sometimes coming out of difficulty and struggle, you have a different sense of values and character and virtue than you might coming out of a period of great success. And again, what we've had, which is a really an unprecedented period of largesse and wealth. I mean, take, for instance, the household net worth in America today, $109 trillion. It's never been higher. There has never been a period in U.S. history where, as a percentage of GDP, 528% of GDP, that is household net worth. We have never had it so good. And at the same time, we're not necessarily the kind of people that you would say we've never been so good. Does that make a difference? I think it does in the end.
Well, no doubt about it. And I guess one of the questions I would have for you, and how do we go through a period of prosperity? I mean, certainly this is historical. I mean, it's something that's very natural throughout history. Going back into biblical times, we saw how when times were really good, people started to forget the lessons of the past and started misbehaving in a way that they brought about their own demise. And, you know, I guess the question is then, given the changes that have taken place, given the technology that we have now, all the different things that have taken place, the affluence that you just mentioned, is it possible to regain those values without going through some hard times, or do we have to go through hard times to learn the lessons over again as a society? And then I guess the other question is, I know that you have children, you have a family. I have a very good friend, Chen Lin, who has done extremely well as an investor, and I know that he's very careful to try to teach his kids not to take all of this for granted. But what can we do as individuals to try to put this in perspective and so that we live our lives in a way that is more responsible?
Right. I don't know that we can change society, but we certainly can change our piece of society. So complacency is what we're fighting. If that is in the area of morals and ethics and spirituality, if it has an impact into sociological spheres, political spheres, and the economy, we're talking about fighting complacency. We're talking about being deliberate about the things that matter to you. We're talking about investing in relationships. Yes, an individual can make a difference with calculation, with deliberation, with intentionality, but I would shrink the universe to something very easy to digest. For you as an individual, there are things that you can do within your own family construct that can make a huge difference. Don't try to change the world. Just change the little world under your feet.
Yes, and I would highly recommend to my listeners The International Legacy by David McIlvaney, a book it's a wonderful read, David. I thank you so much for the effort. It must have taken quite a bit of work to put this in, although it is a personal account of your life and what has happened and how you are intentional about your legacy and how important it is. But more, I think one of the things I took away from your book is that, you know, you say don't try to change the world. Do what you can do to make things better. And that has a tremendous impact, more than we can ever realize, on the people that we come in contact with, I believe. And I think your book points that out in many different ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're dealing with is an issue of quality in relationships. And when we think about the decline in moral values and its ultimate impact into the economy and economic decline, you can see that by compromising the quality of our relationships, we end up enabling the confusion of priorities, the things that we strive for most in life, and we operate without regard to the future. Again, if you want to look at the economy as a macro level expression of what happens on the micro level, when you operate in selfishness, you can do things like ramp up. How many trillions of dollars do we have in debt now? I mean, if we're talking about outstanding debt securities, that is now 460% of GDP. We're willing to embrace that debt because we have no regard for the future. We have no regard for future generations who actually have to pay that off. It's an expression of selfishness and short-sightedness. And again, what I said earlier, we do sacrifice ends for means, and I think all of that ties back to quality of relationships. So that there is a linking between moral values and economic decline, again, because I think we've compromised the quality of relationships.
You know, one of the questions I have in my mind is, and this goes back to my days in college, I had a professor named Dr. Peyton Yoder, a little small Mennonite college that I went to in Kansas, and I think one of the things he said that really changed the way I viewed the world and why I'm talking to you now, quite frankly, was this history professor was quite convinced that when the currency is debased, the a nation's work ethics decline, and also overall, generally, their morality declines. Now, what I would think is that it's not that a debased currency causes people to do what they do, although it probably allows them or permits them or gives them license to do things they wouldn't do if money was honest, if it couldn't be created out of thin air. Do you have any thoughts on that? In other words, what is the cause here? Is it?
Yeah, I think to some degree you see an expression of that in France today, where workers are feeling like they've been devalued, even as their currency has been devalued, even as they struggle to make ends meet and pay the bills. The issue is they're not making more, yet everything around them costs more. Well, why does everything cost more? And I think you and I would agree the reason everything costs more is because 1971, we removed ourselves from the gold standard. The final iteration of the gold standard, Bretton Woods, and any connection to gold, and since that point, we've been able to expand money and credit at a near infinite pace. And that does devalue the work of a man or woman considerably, and I think makes everyone operate in a more desperate fashion. So, yeah, I think there is a relation between sound money and sound behavior within society. Certainly, you see that in the area of politics. When you enable an entire fiat currency system, you know what you also enable? You enable unending, limitless spending at the governmental level. You can create as much credit and debt as you want. We could spend trillions and trillions and trillions more. We were shocked when we got to a trillion under the Reagan administration, right? And it took from George Washington to Jimmy Carter to do it. We should not be shocked if we add another $10 trillion to the national debt. Why? Because we have the printing press and the availability. And again, I think this is an issue of limitless promises by politicians, which is enabled, very disingenuously, but it's enabled by the monetary system that we have. They can buy votes because of the money system that we have. It is unsound as we have anything else represented in Washington today.
You know, I've known Ron Paul for many years. I've considered him a friend in the past, and he has done what he could to try to get this message across that sound money is important for our liberty, for our prosperity longer term. But, you know, David, again, getting back to what we can do as individuals, I'd like to go to the products that your father set up and you have built up over time as well, since you've taken over the business from your father, who is now serving other people, I believe, in the Philippines, helping disadvantaged people in an orphanage, I believe he's working. And your dad is somebody I've known before I knew you, frankly. I'm much closer to his age. But talk to us a little bit about the McIlvany Financial Companies. What are the products that you provide? And one in particular I want to ask you about, because I know it's a new one called Vaulted. It's a way for people to save gold. Or talk to us about Vaulted and then in general what the services that your firm provides.
And Jay, we've been in the metals business for coming up on 50 years and in the wealth management business for a good part of that as well. And we saw a need in the market for an even more transparent, straightforward way to approach gold investing, especially for a younger generation who may be newer to the market or to gold. So we developed Vaulted. Vaulted.com is where you can learn more about it. And it's an easy-to-use, web-based application to reinvent the way people invest in gold. A key value that we embraced through the development process was transparency. Gold investment opportunities have been criticized with, I think, due reason for their hidden fees and taxes and things of that nature. Well, Vaulted addresses all of those issues by providing complete transparency through the investment process. So hey, we have some of the lowest fees in the industry, and it's all shared up front. So the gold is, I think, again, this is critical for a younger generation particularly, it's certified conflict-free. And unlike other gold investing platforms, Vaulted, you buy and sell real gold stored in the Royal Canadian Mint. You can request your gold bars at any time, and they will be shipped securely to you via FedEx. So Vaulted is a convenient, accessible application that allows users to build stability for themselves and their families, starting with an investment as little as $10. The last thing I'll mention is that we've created gift cards so that an older generation who's already put trust in gold as a hedge against the market, as a hedge against inflation, can fund that easy-to-use gold account for their loved ones and even faithful employees. It's essentially a substitute for savings and banking. And, Jay, the reason why we focus on that so heavily is because the value of capitalism, the value of savings, the value of the market economy assumes that you can take what you have saved and put it to good use. But what happens if you are robbed? An inflation target of 2% is 2% theft every year. We have inflation targets all over the world of 4 and 6 and as high as 13% today. And that is considered an acceptable monetary policy. Yeah. It is theft right in front of us. So we had to create something that represents a saving and banking alternative, because just to sit in greenbacks in the banking system means that you will be eroded just as much as our moral fabric has been twisted and turned and torn asunder, as you suggested earlier.
Mm-hmm. And some of your, okay, so the vaulted is really something that anybody can use because, as you say, you can get in for as little as $10. Some of your other services, though, are, I think, more for people of substantial means. Your wealth management is probably something that you need to have a little more money for.
Yeah, exactly. Our wealth management service is for someone who's looking to preserve wealth and operate tactically, whether it is long in the market or short in the market. We have a variety of products. We've partnered with Doug Noland here in the last few years for what we call our tactical short, and that allows for a protective sleeve, a hedge, to be put alongside an existing portfolio of stocks and bonds to lower your volatility and create liquidity in a market downturn. So, for instance, October, this time frame that's been so volatile, beautiful time for us. This is the kind of place where we shine and are able to show our value in a total portfolio mix where we are balancing out a portfolio. We manage portfolios actively on the long side as well. And yeah, it does, in order to do that, it does take a little bit more than $10.
Yeah. Well, but anyway, people can go to your website and explore that if it's appropriate. But I think really for sure vaulted is something. Actually, I did check out vaulted, David, and it is quite an easy process to get involved with. I think the only reason I didn't is because I still have my gold savings somewhere else. But it's something I should get started with in any event, I think. And I just have to find the time to do it. With speaking of time, we don't have that much time left. What do you... Looking to 2019, your crystal ball, I know crystal balls are dangerous because somebody said those who use crystal balls eat glass or something like that.
Yeah.
But what do you see going into 2000? I mean, you and Doug Noland, who's someone I've known for many, many years, what are you seeing? And also maybe just tell our listeners where they might avail themselves to some of the wisdom that's provided, I think, free of charge on your website, perhaps, that Doug and you provide. And also, you have an excellent weekly podcast that I would tell my listeners they definitely should avail themselves to as well.
Yeah, with interest in that gold product in particular, vaulted.com is the place where you can go, and very easy to sign up and open an account to do that with the Royal Canadian Mint. If you're interested in continuing to expand your knowledge and understanding of where we're at in this market and credit cycle, M as in Mary, wealthm.com. So mwealthm.com. And you can look for the Credit Bubble Bulletin, which Doug writes on a weekly basis. We've got a one-page wrap-up for the market every Friday. And as you mentioned, we do also have our audio commentary, which is every Wednesday. So we put a lot of information out there. The Credit Bubble Bulletin is very helpful for gauging where we're at in this credit cycle. And so in answer to your question, where are we at in 2019? We're at the end of the line. We're at the end of the line. The credit cycle has run its course, and we've gone as far as we can. I gave you two statistics earlier, and the significance of those is really only known in comparison to everything that we've seen before it. In terms of total outstanding debt securities, I mentioned that we're now 460% of GDP. That is the highest it has ever been. The previous cycle peaks were 379% in 2007, and we had 359% in the year 2000. So we have far outpaced what we had in any of the previous cycle peaks. The same is true of household net worth. So when you count, I'm not saying it's bad to have household net worth at these elevated levels. It's just dangerous because usually asset classes are mean reverting. They're cyclical in nature. Yeah. If they go up, they also go down. And the fact that we've come farther than we've ever come before suggests that the next 3, 5, 7, even 10 years will be very disappointing in terms of market returns in stocks and bonds. 90% of the assets that are looked at by Deutsche Bank on a routine basis are down from the beginning of the year through the middle of November. 90% of the asset categories dollar denominated. That tells you that there is a universal theme here. It is that there is a correlation across assets. It's not one asset that is in decline. It's many, many. 90%. In fact, that's the largest number of assets all in decline at once since 1901. So for those who are wondering where we're at, we are at the cycle peak. If you're not serious about protecting your savings, protecting your wealth, you need to pull your head out of the sand and re-engage.
All right. And so the one asset that I know of that's pretty well negatively correlated with almost everything else is gold, I believe.
That's right. And I think the next 5 to 10 years is about the time frame I have. And I think maybe if I said conservatively 5 to 7, we expect to see gold in the 3,500 range, maybe as high as 5,000. It depends on the activities, not only in the financial markets, but ultimately in the geopolitical sphere as well. If you look back in time, gold generally peaks when the stock market is on its keister. And if you want to see gold really go bananas, then bring some geopolitical fracas into the mix. And that's, I think, what we're getting ready for. We've got the pump primed with Russia and Ukraine. We've got the pump primed with discussions in China and a breakdown in trade discussions with China. We've got the Petro Yuan, which is now traded for 10 months. The oil futures contract denominated in Yuan. It's traded for 10 months now and is capturing market share from every other major oil exchange. And there are reasons why we will probably end up in a major war with China.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it go at that. But I should tell my listeners that that's the kind of thing that you talk about every week on your show, David. It's really priceless. People should go there. It's free of charge, but it is priceless. Thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciated our chat. And I hope we can do it again sometime in the near future.
Thank you, Jay. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, folks. Well, that is all the time we have next week. Dan Oliver is with me, Michael Oliver also, and Dr. Quentin Henning of Novo Resources is scheduled to be with me. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon Territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.
Often referred to as one of the best teams in junior gold exploration, having discovered a 5 million ounce gold mine and sold a second company amidst discovery, the management behind Orin Resources now has a world-class exploration portfolio within Canada and Peru. Projects that give the company one of the largest direct pipelines for major discoveries globally, with one of the deepest technical teams to explore them. Entering into its third year of aggressive pursuit, Orin is expecting results from two of their major projects throughout the rest of this year. For the latest, head to orinresources.com and subscribe.